Welcome to Life with the Girlfriends with Christine Marie and Julie.
Hi, everyone. I'm Christine Marie.
I was singing there a little bit because I have a cold, and again, I have a cold. And,
yeah.
And so I'm singing to tell the world, no more cold for me. I'm fine. My signs
That's
are
right.
good. I'm not going to cough up a lung today during this show.
And,
no, not me.
And not only that, Norm got it this week.
I know.
I'm just now starting to feel a little clammy. But the thing is, I can fight this off. I know I can.
Oh, you can. And you know what?
Because when you got that first one about 8 weeks ago,
I know.
I didn't get it, you know. I was, like, so happy. Because you usually are like Typhoid Mary.
Except Typhoid Mary never got anything.
Yeah, that's
true. I'm like Typhoid Mary who's always sick.
You're like ground zero.
Exactly. I don't want to be. I remember being coached, and he goes, by the way, Julie, when are you going to just be done with getting colds?
Yes,
and
I remember that.
I was really ticked off at him.
Why, yada, yada. I'll never get another cold again.
I didn't have to say to it. I mean, because...
Yeah. But, you know, I have seen... You do have some habits that I might...
Okay.
Like when you are on your phone quite a bit, right?
Right.
Now I bet you don't know this, but when you have your phone to your ear, you have one finger usually in an eye and then in a nose, and then in an eye and in your nose.
I am not a perpetual eye picker, nose picker.
Yes, you are.
I am not.
Oh, yes, you are.
I mean, unless it's on the outside, I'm not picking my nose.
Oh no. Okay. You're not going in deep. But when you're on the phone, you're like, you know, you've got the your last little finger. It's in your eye, rubbing your eye, goes down to your nose, like, you know, go across your nose.
I know. I think you're right, because right now I have my hand on my face, and it's like, you know, I got the one hand on the phone, the other hand touching my face, looking like, oh.
So you have that. I mean, just that alone, you know, could I mean, I know you're not. I know Typhoid Mary is not the right analogy. But let's call you Ground Zero Julie.
Ground Zero Julie.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And as soon as I take my cough drop out, I start coughing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cute because today, Mom, you said, now, Julie, I know you have a cold, which you perpetually have, but could you please try to enunciate your words for me? Because with your cold and your cough drops, I'm having a hard time understanding you.
Well, all I could think about was, well, for the show tonight.
I agree.
You're like, and I'm like, I'm not hearing her properly. You know?
I was
condemning myself.
No, don't condemn yourself. We're out of condemnation.
That's right.
That's not who we are.
That's right.
I bless you, Christine Marie, and I bless myself as well.
Thank you.
But
I'll accept it.
Thank you. But so out there in the world, if you hear me and I'm talking slower than I normally would talk, because you know me, I got a mile a minute. You know, I'm talking really fast. Not intentionally.
No. I remember one time, though, I was, you know, you said, Mom, is there anything we can improve on in the show? And I just really, off the top of my head, I said, you know, maybe we could let things unfold a little bit more, you know, rather than, you know, change topics, or just let it unfold like a beautiful lotus. And that next show that we did, there was like a lot of moments where I think you were like, I think I'll just let Mom...
feel what
basically,
it feels like.
You were like letting me have my dick swinging in the wind.
That was painful.
It was like cricket, cricket, cricket.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, after that, I go, don't worry about that.
Don't worry about that.
Don't worry about letting it unfold.
Yeah, jump in fast if you want to, Julie.
You go, girl.
I'm working on it, though. There probably is a happy medium. And I think that... we're going to learn more tonight about that happy medium. But yeah, first off, I want to say that we're going to have two authors on tonight that are in the upcoming book, The Unwavering Strength. And
Volume 2.
Volume 2 that you're going to be in.
Yes, which it comes out in, I think, the end of February, like maybe February 23rd or something. Our big launch party is like the 27th, I believe. But the Unwavering Strength Volume 1, international bestseller, five countries, still going strong.
And people are really finding solace in it, this, that we're not alone in our suffering. And sometimes when things happen to us, I don't know why, but we immediately feel like we're the only one going through this, or we're alone, no one will understand. And it's been such a wonderful experience to have people go, yeah, this happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Or thank you, because I was feeling so lost and alone,
mm-hmm.
and I need to find my strength to get through this.
I can't reach Tilly.
Okay.
No, is that, did you,
yeah.
Well, we checked the number again.
Yes. So actually, what we're going to take is a two-minute break,
mm-hmm.
everyone, real quick, so I can get our next guest on, because I don't think I have her on the right number. So hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Hello, we're back from our short little break. We had a little technical difficulty there for a split second.
Yeah.
And what was wonderful about that is that we were able to call our next guest in, Tilly Dunn, who is the author of one of the stories of the next book of Unwavering Strength.
Which we were just talking
about.
Yes,
and did a little sound check. And Tilly, hi, how are you doing there, Tilly?
Oh, I'm all relaxed and ready for your question.
Oh, wonderful.
Good.
I want to share a little story about Tilly real quick. We were chatting online or on through emails, and she said something to me and I thought was so sweet. She goes, you know, my story's a little serious, and I know you guys are all about heartwarming stories and fun, and I hope that we do okay tonight. And and I just wanted to say, oh, our audience loves all these wonderful authors sharing their stories of strength, and how perfect Tilly's story is about a serious situation that happened to her when she was younger. And Tilly, I don't want to tell your story because I have a tendency to tell the story of the authors right off the bat. So I just want to spill out the whole beans. So would you mind sharing your story with our audience, and then we can talk a little bit more about your spiritual healing?
Okay, and it's the spiritual healing that's important.
You bet.
I was 20, and that was the year of 1965, the fall of 1965.
Mm-hmm.
I had been in Holland for the previous year and decided that I really belonged in Canada. It was a question whether I would be for the rest of my life in Holland or in Canada. And I went back to Toronto to Ryerson University, it's called today. Then it was called Ryerson Polytechnical Institute. And in that fall, loving dancing, I had the courage to go to a dance on my own. And it ended badly. Would you like to ask me questions, or do you want me to keep going?
No, you can get,
we read the story, Tilly, and you know, we know that, you know, basically you were sexually attacked, you know. In fact, your story is called The Rape, and that's exactly what it was. But what was so encouraging and life affirming is how you found your own unwavering strength to, you know, begin the healing process. Could you share some of that with us, Tilly?
Sure. This is something that I know has happened to more people than want to come out with.
Yeah.
And it was something that when I had first been raped, I was really shocked and hurt and wanted to crawl into a hole and die. I really did. In fact, I'd been plagued with suicidal thinking as well. So this certainly didn't help. But yes, like many, I have an unwavering strength, and it's the spirituality of it that really allowed me to really think about it, rethink about it, and go over it and realize that this was just an experience that I was meant to have and have a story that I am now having in print. People can read it and they can say, okay, she thought about it, it happened, and she moved on. And that's what I did. I moved on. And the spirituality of it is the most important.
I'm going to ask you a question. If you don't mind me talking a little about the incident, because growing up, I think a lot of young women, you talk about your story, how you loved the idea of love and
that's
romance.
Right. And I did.
I can say the same thing about me as well in certain areas when I was growing up. And a lot of my friends did. We had this romanticized vision of how we'd have, I think they call it the cute meet. You know, you'd meet somebody in this really cute way and it would all go okay and nothing bad would happen. And sometimes we would, I think, let our guards down. And when you met this man at the dance, he was charming, you know? He was a charming
That's
guy.
Right.
And he brought
That's
you
right.
back to his little one-room studio.
His room, yeah.
And
I was completely fooled. I considered myself a good judge of people. I'd had a lot of socializing at that point. I'd been to 14 camps in my youth, and I was very comfortable with other people. So,
I
was completely fooled. What's that?
Yeah. I said you were in Europe. I mean, you've done a lot of traveling before this as well.
That's right. That's right. I'd been on my own the previous year, at a nursing school in Amsterdam. And there was a lot of experience with that. I'd had lots of experiences with having platonic friends and sometimes having a bit more, but I was reserving myself for when I was married. And this hadn't even come up during the evening. This was a man who appealed to me during the evening, and it's like a good salesman. He was just bringing me to the next step and to the next step, and here I had no inkling of what was going to happen when we were playing dice and playing cards. My coat was on, my hand was on the doorknob, and all of a sudden he grabbed me. It was from his point of view, it's possible that he was thinking, wait a minute, I don't want this woman to go out the door yet. And maybe he hadn't had any preconceived idea of what he was going to do to me. But that man was history for me as soon as this had happened. But in the classroom, for the next 2.5 years that my classmates and I were together, the first time that they're going to hear about this story is when they read it in the book.
Oh, wow. And I mean, it's been, a long 50 years, 45 years, something like that?
Yeah, 50 years. I'm going to be 70
years.
Next March.
Oh, and I thank you for being so brave to come out with this. Because I think a lot
well,
of
it does. It does take a bit of courage because this is something that I did. I wanted to crawl into a hole and die. That was literally how I felt. But you can. Yeah. There are lots and lots of things that can happen in life that you can either be plowed under or you say no, not me, and rise above it.
Mm. And when I read your story, it did remind me of women that I know that. May not have led to rape, but led to other situations where it could have gotten further if something else didn't come into play. Where we, and then revisiting it, going, wait a minute, I was a good judge of character, or I saw the good in everybody. And that's why I say it's no one, it's not your fault, first of all, that this happened.
A lot of women, I think, may relate to this story.
Oh, I know that.
So I was really pleased when Judy was willing to. Actually, it was Peggy first. Peggy McCall is my mentor, and Judy is her sister, and she said to Judy, "Nope, leave that title. It's good. The story is good the way it is."
Mm-hmm. Yes, and
it's a bit intense. Yeah.
And it's interesting, Tilly, because you know, now that you've come out, have you been hearing from other people saying, this happened to me as well?
No.
You know, in the 70s or 80s, they called it the date rape, right? Or 90s, you know, date rape started getting this big name where, you know, mm-hmm. you just didn't know it was going to happen. Like, wait a minute, this is happening?
But in the 60s, you know, we didn't have a term for that. I can remember.
No, date rape didn't exist yet then.
Right.
And going to the hospital after you've been raped, rape certainly wasn't considered either.
No. Well, and go ahead, Mom. What were you saying?
What did Tilly just say?
Oh, Tilly, what did
you
say?
If you went to the emergency room at the hospital, they would just assume look at you as okay, what did you do wrong?
Exactly.
Had this happen to you.
Right. That's true. I mean, my 60s story was I was with a girlfriend who was, we had gone to, her boyfriend was a med student, and they all lived in, you know, like a med student housing. And so I had gone along, and I can remember meeting this nice med student. And before I knew it, he was, you know, trying to strong-arm me, really. And I was lucky that some people walked in at the time, because I don't know what could have happened, but I knew it was heading in the wrong direction. But, you know, we didn't have a word for it at that time. We really did. It's not like we knew the person or, you know, we're with some other people, you know.
In all innocence, it can happen. So the message here too is that I think women who have some experience that they feel badly about, or from long ago or recent, to forgive yourself.
Yes, I was going to ask you how forgiveness played in your spiritual healing, and really is about forgiving yourself. How long did it take you before that forgiveness consciousness came over you, that energy of forgiveness came over you?
It took about a year,
mm-hmm.
which for me was a long time because I was very spiritual.
Mm-hmm. I know that to me that was part of the unwavering strength, is that, you know, where some people could, like you said, just want to crawl in a hole, cover up, that you still wanted to find love, you know, the one. And you did,
mm-hmm.
didn't you?
And I did. We've been married for 46 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he's been on a roller coaster with me. Because less than 4 years later, I was diagnosed bipolar.
Oh.
And you talked about your story having the post-traumatic stress. Do you think, I mean, did all that, like, play into it or aggravate the situation so it all came out to be dealt with, or?
After it happened, when I was alone in my room, absolutely. There are lots and lots of times when I've been analyzing things and when Conversations with God came out by Neil Dolan Walsh, mm-hmm. I thought, wow, this is in a book form now, and I've been doing it for decades, you know. Mm-hmm. Lots of us, we don't need, if you're Catholic, you don't need to have a pope to communicate with God. Every single one of us can communicate with God personally, and it's not hearing voices or anything else. It's just the thoughts that are coming into our mind.
Mm-hmm.
New thoughts.
Absolutely.
Thoughts that you can attribute to God instead of your own thinking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And, you know, you've talked a little bit in our conversation just briefly about the other side, the man that did this to you, maybe what was he thinking? Were you able to forgive him? Was that ever part of your process? Or was it all about you and forgiveness for you to move on? How did it play for you?
On Monday, this happened on a Saturday night. On Monday, he was forgiven and forgotten. I mean, this wasn't about he was not my concern. I was not ever going to meet him again, but he was certainly forgiven. Whatever happened in his life had him do what he did to me.
Right.
But it's not for me to judge him. It's not for me to decide whether he did anything right or wrong as far as he was concerned. I was only a judge of myself saying, I am forgiven. I am forgiven for what happened. It is not something that I deliberately did.
Wow. So I can hear that you have strong spiritual base.
Yes.
Before this happened.
Yes.
For you to be able to come to that conclusion so fast. And
well,
that's why
actually from the age of 3 or 4. I grew up in a forest in Holland. I'm writing a book right now called Exit Stage Left, and it's about my 51 years of suicidal thinking, 42 years of being on medication for bipolar disorder, and both of them are behind me. Since 7 years ago when I had back surgery at the Laser Spine Institute in Tampa, Florida, I have not had one suicidal thought, and since 3 years ago when I was able to meditate to the point where I thought, okay, I'm going to discuss with my psychiatrist about discontinuing my antipsychotic medications. It was done, and I've been off antipsychotics now for 3 years, after being on them for 42.
Thank you. God, that is an amazing story, because sometimes we just need to have a little hope that things can change.
That's right.
That's right.
So my book, Exit Stage Left, has curtain calls at the end of every chapter, and I will be giving suggestions on how you can be motivated, inspired to improve your own life. Mm.
Exit Stage Left. Now, when do you have that coming out, Tilly?
That'll be soon after Volume 2 of Unwavering Strength. I can say is coming soon.
We understand that. There's always a process of another edit, or maybe not another edit. Is it good enough? When should it come out?
Right. Well, I've got a ghostwriter, and he's wonderful.
Oh.
And I've got Peggy McCall as my mentor. Couldn't have for anything better.
No, you couldn't.
She's awesome.
She is very much.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. You did well with that, for sure. And what was your motivation to share your stories in Exit Stage Left? Because a lot of people
who can improve their depressive feelings just by reading books like mine.
Yes. Well, and
to give hope.
And I know from my perspective as well, I appreciate the topic that you're attacking, because I've had in my outer circle, you know, 5 people commit suicide, as a high school student, and then the rest as adults in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that a lot of people, including myself, I have gone through times of having suicidal thoughts, and you want to move beyond that. And so I appreciate when someone's able to say, well, I've had these thoughts, and let's move beyond that. So thank you for writing this book. And, you know.
Oh, you're welcome.
All the information that you've gotten over the years.
Yeah, such an inspiration, Tilly.
There are a lot of self-help books from the professionals, but I don't see too many from the people who've gone through it.
Absolutely. Yes.
Exactly.
Through the fire and rise like the phoenix from the ashes.
And so, Tilly, what would be the one thing you'd want to leave our audience with today?
Oh, I'd like to leave the audience with a feeling of love.
Oh. And when you said that, I could feel your energy come right through the phone.
Me too.
Right through our show, right to the audience. And
wonderful.
Right back at you.
Thank you. Yes, we can look in a mirror and love ourselves.
Yes.
That's the first thing to do. You can't give what you don't have. So first of all, look in the mirror, love yourself, nurture it, and let it grow, and then you can give it, lots of it.
Mm. Well, Tilly, I'm so happy and delighted that you found love and you've been married for how many years, 46 years?
Yeah, 46.
And that's amazing. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
And that you've, you know, you've found your own unwavering strength and have generously decided to share your inspiration and your story for, you know, even if just one person is helped, it's amazing.
Yeah, and this is wonderful, this technology, that you can touch more and more people.
Exactly. And that's the one thing about now, and this, I'm so grateful to be alive during this time, because mm-hmm. with technology, we are able to touch so many more people, and more specific people. I mean, it's like people can go, oh, I need help on this.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tilly shows up in their life, you know, by
right.
maybe doing a Google search. Or
That's
Google.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty awesome. Now, Tilly, do you have a website or not yet?
No, I don't have a website yet. All I've got is my email address.
Well, we would love to have you back on again when your book comes out, Exit Stage Left, if you'd be open to that.
Absolutely.
Oh, wonderful.
Great. Well, thank you, Tilly. I hope you have a wonderful night. And I wanted to let everybody know her story is coming in the next edition of Unwavering Strength, and that comes out in
the
February?
End of February.
Yes.
And I think it's called
February the 24th.
February 24th. And Tilly, what's the subtitle? Do you remember?
Oh, it's Go Placidly Amid the Noise and Haste and Remember What Peace There May Be in Silence. And that's Desiderata, found in Old St. Paul's Church, 1692 in Baltimore.
I loved your quote from your, I love the quote you picked for your story. That was perfect. And we will let you go right now. And everybody can go to unwaveringstrength.com. To sign up and I guess pre-order the book or get the latest version as well.
Right, and when they order the second volume, I think we're going to have a song.
We have three songs.
Yes,
already, and they were donated to Unwavering Strength. And I don't know the logistics of it, but it's possible that you can get the CD downloaded free with the book.
That's exactly right.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Tilly. Have a wonderful, wonderful night. And
thank you, Tilly.
For sharing your story with us.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your
inspiration. Yeah, thank you, Julie, Christine Marie. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Ah, yay. I love Tilly. I love her
what
energy.
What an inspiring story.
What an inspiring story, indeed. And
that really is what Unwavering Strength is about.
You know, it's so funny going, you know, being in college. Well, first off, I remember real quick before we take our break, but I remember, you know, some of the old movies that you used to love, Mom, when
mm-hmm.
I was growing up, the
mm-hmm.
black and whites.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to remember that the men were always so aggressive with the women.
Yeah.
And no didn't mean no. No just meant I'm playing a game with you.
Yeah.
And it's a little cat and mouse game.
That's exactly right. Those black and white movies were like that.
It's crazy.
And, like, you know, like the guys, you know, you'd go, don't, stop. And they would be hearing, don't stop.
Yeah.
You know, you're like,
I'm like, what?
Oh, my God.
I thank God we live now, I guess, and at least we can talk about it openly. And so, everyone, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with our next guest, Dr. Joanne White.
I was a yay, yay girl.
Name of the show, girlfriend?
Life of the Girlfriend.
Right.
And I'm a yeah yeah girl. You're a yeah yeah girl.
Always.
And I want to introduce Dr. Joanne White. I'm going to ask her if she's a yeah yeah girl.
I'm a yeah yeah girl. I'm a yeah yeah girl.
Yeah. Awesome. We're all yeah yeah girls here. And Dr. Joanne White, first of all, I want to just say that you have a radio show, Power Your Life Radio and TV. You can find out more about Dr. Joanne White at drjoannewhite.com. She's a coach, an author. pretty amazing woman. I was just looking at some of the books you've written and been a part of, and you've written a book on bullying and about joy and about success. And I was reading about you and realizing, oh, two things. I'm exhausted. And I don't do nearly enough.
We're too lazy, Julie.
and so I feel so honored to have you on as our guest with the new book coming out on Unwavering Strength. And so, Dr. Joanne, tell us a little about yourself and about your story that you've put into the new book works of Unwavering Strength.
Okay, well, it's real. On some level, it's not my story. I do a lot of coaching of families, and this particular story was about a family. It was about a young girl who was a young teenager who was bullied in school and bullied by several girls, a very popular group, and because she was different, because she was more interested in art and more interested in writing than she was in boys and in how she looked. And I guess that's very important at a particular age. Well, I know it is, and there are lots of cliques. And she was kind of on the outside, but they were very, very malicious about it. Mm-hmm. And really found ways to humiliate her and to really not make her feel good in so many ways and it just began to progress. And what was happening is she was so, I guess, quiet about it initially and just was keeping it all inside. So her mother really didn't know what was going on. And that's the sad part, is that there was a lot of shame associated with it. And what happened was that she really started to develop these physical problems that were related to the stress and related to everything that was going on in school. And initially, she just didn't want to go to school, and she would make up these reasons for not going to school. But eventually, she really ended up getting irritable bowel syndrome and was referred to me by, they went to the family doctor, and the doctor said she's having post-traumatic stress, and she has she's got physical symptoms. And it was at the point where she really felt like she didn't know where to turn. They didn't know where to turn. She was she couldn't go to school anymore because of the physical symptoms were so severe. She was on special medication, and they were looking for some help. So somebody recommended me, and that's how the story began. And I helped them a lot. I mean, I was working with them. You know, sometimes people think, well, when you're coaching or when you're counseling, it's not your story. And it's true. It's not my story. But when you get very connected to people, you can't help but make sure and wanting the best for them and wanting to make sure that they thrive and they're able to move forward in whatever way they need to be. And so I became very connected. We actually had to get her homeschooled temporarily because she just physically and emotionally could not do it. She even went through an ideation of suicide for a while, just finding herself, like, she just kept thinking it was hopeless.
Yes.
And I don't know if any of your listeners have ever gotten to a point of hopelessness, but oftentimes when we get to a place of despair, everything seems so dark. I know that you need to remember that there is a light at the end of this dark tunnel, but when you're in the midst of it, the grips of it, Julie and Christine, sometimes you don't even know or that there
well,
is.
Well, and
there is
when you're dealing with a student, you know, a young person, I'm sure that your emotional connection is even more, because here you are, you can feel the sense of, you know, they can't just pick up and leave themselves. They don't have the freedom or even the you know, the ability to just take care of themselves or to start new and fresh. And so they really are, you know, have to be taken care of by the adults around them to make the best decisions possible.
Yes.
Last week we interviewed Tina Dietz, and she was she's a coach now and an author, but she was severely bullied as a child. And had post-traumatic stress disorder as well, had very much the same symptoms mm-hmm. as your client and your the person that you helped with. And so you realize that I think for so many years we took bullying so casually. It'll toughen you up. But the truth is...
Or it's not what you think it is.
Right.
You know, like I said last week, you know, when I moved to the new school, I was extremely bullied by the guys, and my mom went to the nuns, and they said, oh, they just have a crush on her.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, you're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, and that was a term we only used for soldiers for the longest time.
Right, but I think that when something is repeated like that, and when it gets to a point where just the something triggers it, and that's where you go into post-traumatic stress. This young girl was, I mean, we eventually got her in a different school because she was terrified to go back to school. She just didn't want to, and she was this incredibly bright, artistic, talented girl in so many ways, but she didn't fit in. She certainly didn't fit in there. So you're right. I mean, so many times we have taken, oh, they're just teasing or they're just mm-hmm. roughhousing. However, I think it's escalated, and I think that people, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's at school, whether it's in the home, people really need to recognize that persistent teasing can and making fun of somebody can be a form of bullying. There's
yes.
the cyberbullying, and bullying can escalate. I have some horror stories, I'm not going to go into it now, about kids that I've worked with who've been severely bullied, and the aftermath is, like you said, the post-traumatic stress and really not being able to move forward in a lot of ways. And sometimes those scars, sometimes what happened in the past can be permanent. Now, I just completed a book called Bully Free, and it's really not my story. It's stories of families and children and youth with special needs and their story about being bullied. And oftentimes these children couldn't even defend themselves in some way or even recognize when they were being bullied. And mm-hmm. so that was very sad. But again, I also believe in the strength of the human spirit. So I think that it's so important, firstly, I believe that it's everybody's responsibility to really take a look out for one another and to, if you see something going on, to not just be that bystander that does nothing, but to really chip in some way, and which really does offset a bully, because the bully really is oftentimes may be doing all this self-aggrandizement because he or she feels really less secure about who he is or she is and needs in some way to feel bigger than or stronger than
right.
or better than another person.
No, and it's interesting you say I'm on your website right now, and you can get the is it an e-book or is it a book or is it both? Can you get an e-book form or Bully Free?
Bully Free is it's an e-book.
And you can get it right on Dr. Joanne White's website. It's just drjoannewhite.com. A lot of other books there as well. But when we were interviewing Tina Dietz, one thing that was interesting about her case, later in life, she lived in a small town, and her good friend actually ended up marrying the person that literally for a whole year of her life brutalized her. And
wow.
he came up afterwards and said, here's a letter for you. You know, read it when you had time. And you know, he apologized for doing this, and you know, he said, "Please don't tell my wife because she doesn't know she only thinks of me as a good person. She doesn't know who I was back then." And so, do you see that through your work with people who have been bullied, that sometimes the person that's doing the bullying, yes, we know there's probably other issues, but that they also have later in life great remorse? Or,
that's hard to. That's a beautiful story that happened to her, but that's hard to say because oftentimes we don't follow, especially the bully. We don't follow them. I'm sure as somebody gets older, well, I'm not sure, but I would hope that as somebody gets older and they take a look at some of the behaviors when they were younger that they weren't too proud of, they do have a feeling of remorse. However, there are lots of sociopaths out there who really do not feel remorse, do not feel guilt, can lie, and we're not really addressing those people. But I really don't know. I don't know if that happens. I would be hopeful that that would happen. In this case of this young girl, Carol, that did not happen. What happened was that, I mean, it ended up having a happy ending, but not because the former bullies, and they were several, came up and apologized. And basically what happened was that we found the right school for her, whereby it was an incredible program of support, both from the faculty and the other students, and they were sensitive and sensitized to caring for people and to people who were different. And so she fit in beautifully, and she made friends, and she felt good about herself, and she started to blossom, and she started to come out of her dark shell. And so that was big, because we didn't know initially. She had to decide if she was going to go back to school, and she was so traumatized that initially we didn't know if she was going to be able to do that. She was not talking. She was so withdrawn. She was just really cut off. And here was, I think it's so terrible, too, when kids, when it happens to children, they're so robust with life and energy and not thinking that the world can be a cruel or a mean place, and sometimes it can. And so I think that it's just really not pleasant to see something happening like that to a young person. And on the other side, I've seen it happening to elder people, too, where they've been bullied in the street or robbed or been taken advantage of, and it's even happening in the workplace. I think it's more and more rampant now. And like I said earlier, I think that what's so important is that we each have to play a very active role in that to really make bullying stop.
You're exactly right. I think that's the only way that we're going to get through this, because it isn't just, you know, when it happens to a child, you hope that the teachers can see it, can help, and then you hope the parents are able to find help and assistance to help the children get through this and move beyond, and then find the right environment. I had my degree in special education, and so I was always surprised that we expected every child to succeed in the same kind of classroom. And now we know that doesn't have to happen. There are children that can thrive in big schools and then home schools, and then with special education, you know, we'd have much smaller classes and a wide variety of support needed and so forth. And when I heard your story, and I thought, oh, thank goodness, they were open enough everybody around was open enough to get her into a different school, hoping that it would be okay. Mm-hmm. And gratefully for her, it was. And sometimes when I see, and I haven't taught in a while, and I don't know for sure about all the online school programs and all the charter schools, but I there's a part that says, I hope that we are able to fit now kids in the right school, because not every school is successful for everybody. And sometimes there's just not a match with personalities either. Like, if you're in a school and there's bullies there, mm-hmm. you can't, unless you leave, it's hard to escape that.
Yeah, and especially if the teachers aren't willing to look at it seriously. I mean, you feel like, you know, people spend thousands of dollars on their mattresses because it's like 8 hours a day of their life.
Exactly.
But when you go to school, I mean, that's a huge amount of time in a hostile environment.
My heart just breaks thinking about this.
No, but you know what's also important to remember is that when a child leaves, the whole concept of school is that they're really supposed to take care of kids. We've had a lot going on here right now with some schools closed because of hazing that got out of hand
in
a school that's in Jersey, and it's received national attention, and they actually have temporarily they have canceled the programs for this year and next year. And so it's going on a lot, but I think that teachers and administration and adults need to be able to be to safeguard kids when they're in their environments, when they're in their school, when they're in their recreational center. We have a responsibility to do that no matter what. And about this girl, Carol, I mean, this school initially denied. They interviewed, and this is the sad part, they interviewed those girls that were bullying Carol, and the girls lied. And they said, oh, we were just teasing. We weren't doing anything, you know, nothing. And the school believed them. So the mothers really started to do a lot more with trying to get outside support. And I think the school was relieved when she said, you know, we're going to put in a petition for another school, because I think that they just wanted this to go away quietly, and that was the way to do it.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe how lucky Carol was to have her mom, have these adults, because the first line of defense, the teachers certainly didn't help her. They weren't there for her. The principal wasn't there for her. And whether or not they didn't want to believe, or they didn't want to take it seriously, they just wanted to let it. Time will pass, right? Kids will grow up. Who knows what their thinking was? And it really required, like you're saying, Dr. Joanne, it requires the people that witness it to stand up and say, no, this is not going to happen. We're going to help out. We're going to try and do whatever we can to get some kind of relief around this situation. And she had to leave. You know, she had to leave her environment.
Right.
The other three girls, they didn't have to leave, right? They could still be there. And it was her that had to move on.
And they were fine there. And they probably, who knows if they went on picking on somebody else who was different. We don't know that. And maybe, hopefully, they didn't get away with it because the school was more sensitized to somebody like Carol who was coming through. So I don't know. I'm hoping that everybody learned something from this. I think what was important for me in terms of the experience was to really be able to see it through and to help her, to help Carol. And I think oftentimes what people don't realize is even though it's affecting one family member, it has an impact on the entire family.
Yes,
she was traumatized. She wasn't acting like Carol. She was withdrawn. She was not communicating. She was feeling helpless and hopeless, and it's a good thing that her mother began to kind of catch up on it. So I think too, you need to pay attention to what's happening to your children. Are they coming home from school looking different? Are they acting differently? Or are there any behaviors, whether it's behaviors towards the family, towards themselves, or even schoolwork or sleeping or eating habits or any of those change? And I think parents have a responsibility to really kind of stay on top of their kids. And that doesn't mean to be so micromanaging that they can't do anything. But who are your kids' friends? Do you know who your kids' friends are? Have you had kids over? Do you know what they're doing online? Do you know what they're doing in chat rooms? Are you aware of what's going on? And even if your kid comes home, your teenager comes home, and you ask her, well, how is school? Okay, these one syllables. Get more information. Get involved. Get engaged. Be there.
Well, thank you, Joanne White. It's a perfect place to stop because sorry, we're all getting over a cold here, everyone. I apologize.
I know, all of us.
but to you know, be aware when you see it happen, stand up. And you know, I want to say thank you, Dr. Joanne, for being there for Carol. And I also want to say thank you for bringing the point up that it can happen to anyone at any age.
Yes.
And it's when we are at our least strongest, we are the most vulnerable. And so let's all look out for the people in our lives that aren't the strongest, that are the most vulnerable.
And please direct them to Dr. White.
Dr. JoanneWhite.com.
Yeah, but the bully-free ebook.
Yep, the bully-free. She has her, go right to her programs and products. You can go get her book right there. And then she also has Power Your Life radio and TV show. You can find out more about everything she's doing, all the hard work she's doing on bullying,
mm-hmm.
and success and joy. She's all over. She does it all.
Well, and I want to thank her for doing that. That's
a
great service to the planet.
Thank you, Dr. Joanne.
Thank
Have a wonderful
Thank you so much.
Wonderful.
And thanks, and you too, and thanks so much for your doing by spreading the word. It's really important work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great, great Sunday night.
Oh. You too. Feel good. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Oh, that's sweet.
Okay. And that's why I want to leave our audience tonight, is this idea of feeling good.
Yes. I love that you find your own unwavering strength and the courage to stand up and say, no, this goes no farther.
Yeah.
And do that and mean it and change somebody's life. Make a stand for somebody's
life. You
know,
I remember Dr. Wayne Dyer talked about standing up in front of a bully, seeing when adults behave badly. And he says there's always a way to do it when you're not offending anybody. You know, mm-hmm. you're killing a sweet touch in
mm-hmm.
some sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that when this happens, I'm brave enough to stand up. And I'm also wise enough or get the download enough to be able to do it in a soft touch
right.
so that that the experience can be transformed. Because I don't want it to happen to anybody else. I don't want,
I can't even say one more person.
Well, so anyway, I apologize to the audience for not having my words correctly tonight, but
we're cutting you slack.
Thank you.
I'm cutting me slack tonight.
Great. So I want to say to everybody, go now to unwaveringstrength.com. You can get up the latest book, and then also Dr. Joanne White's and Tilly Dunn's story is going to be in the next book, along with.
And we'll have to interview me for.
Yes.
I'm going to be in the second one as well.
For sure, for sure.
Do I get the whole hour?
Yes, you will have the whole hour.
I'm special.
I will grill you about the story. Since I am part of the story somewhere in there.
You are part of the story. You're part of the ending.
And
you're the beginning and the ending.
There you go. And then also, too, I want to say you can go get our book, The Clutterfly Effect, on Amazon.com, or just go to theclutterflyeffect.com. You can get it right there.
And it's called Tweak Your Way to Total Transformation by Decluttering Your Life.
And today we had a little family meeting, and I had to recommit to decluttering my life.
You know, you have to do it every so often to recommit.
Exactly.
Because it does get away from you.
It does.
The emotional clutter, the physical clutter, everything. So,
all right. Well, everyone have a great, great weekend. And
I had a wonderful night with you, Julie. It was great.
It was great. Bye-bye.
It was great.